Love, Simon is a new romantic comedy for teens, and it begins with a cheerful monologue delivered by a 16-year-old who's just been given keys to a new car for his birthday.
I'm just like you. For the most part, my life is totally normal. My dad was the annoyingly handsome quarterback who married the hot valedictorian. And no, they didn't peak in high school.
This monologue turns out to be Simon's first email to a classmate who's written an anonymous blog post about being gay.
So, like I said, I'm just like you. I have a totally, perfectly normal life. Except I have one huge-ass secret.
Simon hesitates before hitting send. He signs warmly, then deletes it. No, fondly, delete, delete. Then finally, he signs with just a name, a fake name, Jacques. It's the beginning of an intimate correspondence. The two boys confide in each other, give each other courage, and ultimately fall in love, which would be great if they were out, but they're not, and they've still got to find each other in real life. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard is a screen time all about the first big-budget romantic comedy for teens where the central love story is a gay love story about coming out while coming of age. Call 816-235-2888 if this movie means something to you now or might have made a difference when you were Simon's age. 816-235-2888. I'm here with a couple of guests in studio, the young local artist known as Boy Boy. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm also here with Kansas City weatherman Gary Lezak. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Fantastic.
So I want you both to start by telling me your coming out stories. And Boy Boy, I'm going to start with you. What was your experience?
Oh, okay. Well, there was like the more private one where I confided in a few friends in a tree house that then led to like some weird personal drama. But like the big...
How old were you then?
Oh, God. I think I might have been... It was like 16 or 7. 16, I think. I don't remember anymore. And then my like bigger coming out thing was actually... I went to Catholic grade school in high school. And it was at a Catholic retreat at a nunnery. It was like an overnight thing, and I was in a wheelchair because I broke my leg. And then I was just like, and I had a blonde bowl cut with like a little baby rat tail coming out the back. Anywho, we had this one part where everybody kind of gets up and talks about like their struggle or like what they've been dealing with, and it's like this kind of...
It's a formal part of the education at this school?
Oh, no, no.
Oh,
it's just, it's like a suggested thing. It's like, it's called Kairos, and it's like, basically, everybody goes, and it's not necessarily inherently, like, it was a Catholic retreat, but it wasn't, like, it was more everybody get to know each other, like,
gotcha.
Understand.
Like an icebreaker type thing?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. Then it was everybody kind of got up and, like, spilled their guts, and then I got up there and, like, hopped up there, ended up coming out to my class.
Was it planned?
It was, like, I was thinking about doing it, and I was like, why not? It should be, it'll be fine.
And what year are we talking about?
I think this was my senior year of high school.
But like in decades.
Oh, 2012, right? Yes, that's how time works.
Pretty recently.
Yeah, yeah, relatively recently. And then, and everybody was relatively supportive. And like some of the jocks like came up to me and were like asking like very endearing questions.
Such as?
Well, I started talking about like how I went to like a sex shop with one of my friends and they were like, oh, you went to a sex shop? That's crazy. And then they were like, I was like, no, you're 18. You just walk in, you poke around, see what's available.
So it sounds like you were pretty comfortable with this.
Yeah. I don't think I was ever like inherently like in the closet. Like I didn't tell people, but I wasn't not being myself. Cause I always dressed kind of weird. I kind of acted kind of weird. I was the weird art kid. And I just like, I got very good at just like not noticing if people were being mean or something like that. Like I was just kind of oblivious to a lot of things in the best way. It went over pretty well. And then once I got to college, it was just like free for all of like, I just don't care anymore.
Well, so this is Boy Boy. And I want to also talk with Gary Lezak. As a lot of our listeners probably know, Gary, you came out publicly and professionally just recently in December, I think.
Yes. It was December, right around the holidays, even though everyone at work at KSHB pretty much knew I was gay, and it's not like I'd been out in, you know, for professionally, but in the public, I was not out officially. So for me, I decided to finally do it so I could start helping, maybe become a role model for the youth of our community.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if you were partly thinking about the audience that this movie we're talking about today was probably designed for, young people who could possibly be afraid to come out themselves.
And that's what's so amazing about Love, Simon, how it you know, resonated within myself. Because for me, it was 12, 13 years old. I realized I'm gay. And probably just like Simon in the movie, for years, he now is understanding that he's gay. We realize we're gay, but we don't tell anybody. We do hold that secret. That's what's so amazing, is that Simon held the secret until he was sort of outed during the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's really a private thing. Each one of us should be able to come out in our own way. We should not be outed. And it's extremely difficult. But think about it. When you're 12, 13 years old, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm attracted to the same sex, and it's not something you choose, and all of a sudden you've got this secret, just like in the movie. And so for me, my brother probably knew. Besides my brother, hardly anybody knew. So 16, 17, 18 years old, I go to college. Sophomore year of college, 19, we're talking, this is 1981, not 2012, like boy. And I decided I'm going to come out to my family. And I came out to my mom and my dad, and they had different reactions. So in the movie, to me, it was some of the most emotional moments for me was watching how the mother and the father reacted.
I'm just going to issue a general spoiler alert right now. Right. Go on. Okay.
And they were pretty positive reactions, and you weren't sure how that was going to go, mm-hmm. but and it really waited to the end. There were very powerful moments in the movie, actually, for me. I two of my five or six cries in the movie, and I'm sitting there with a whole bunch of teenagers at the theater, and I went by myself to go see that. Andy didn't come with me. He still needs to go see that movie. But when I came out to my mother in 1981, she actually knew. My brother had told her I was gay. Mm-hmm. And
you didn't know that?
I didn't know she knew yet.
Right.
But
was that upsetting to you to find out later?
No. Well, I found out later. A year later, I found out she had known. I didn't know. She just wanted to, she just wondered why I never went out with any girls. So she asked me how come I never wanted to date this girl Liz. And so she asked five times. She said, I love you. Honey, I love you. I love you. I just want to ask you. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to ask me right here while we're having my favorite dinner. I just got home from college. And that's how it all came to be.
And you said your parents had different reactions. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, my mom and dad were actually getting divorced at the time. And so so that was quite an experience. And my father came over. He thought we were going to talk about that. My brother and I had different things to talk about. And so when I told my dad's exact words out of his mouth were, no, you're not. You can't be. You just think you are. That was his reaction. And it took my father 10, 12 more years before he could tell anybody that I was gay. And but he was supportive at the same time. I don't know how to explain it. He was totally supportive. It was just hard for him in the 1980s mm-hmm. to tell people. And then, you know, he was able to start telling people 10 years later.
There is a character in this movie who the only out gay student in the high school who explains that, yeah, you know, you should hear his mom talking about the fake girls he goes on dates with. You should hear her voice when she talks about it. Was that something you could relate to?
Not really that. I mean, I was really so open to myself. I never faked it. My mom never thought I was going out with girls because I never did. I never ever really did. And so it wasn't part, that wasn't the part that hit me in the movie. There are many other parts of Love, Simon that just hit me. The group of friends that didn't know that he hung out with. I had a group of friends that didn't know, even though they'd say, oh my gosh, Gary's in love with Dan. Look at that. He's in love with him. Look at that. He's gay. But then when I, even though they said that out loud, when I came out to them, they were still shocked. You are? What? They couldn't believe it. Because, you know, I was more, you know, I wasn't obvious. So.
And so I think this would also be a good time to get into a little more plot synopsis before we launch into our reviews and some more of the most meaningful moments. It's basically a story of an online friendship that develops between two people anonymously, and Simon is one of them. He's got this incredibly supportive family. He's like kind of in a he's in a nice house in the suburbs. He has a great group of friends. The high school is seems to be very racially diverse, and the jocks hang out with the theater people, so it's not the most cliquish high school atmosphere ever, but the two boys are nervous for different reasons about coming out, though in Simon's case, he seems to mostly be nervous about things changing, not a threat of any particular kind, but really just things are going to change. And how is that going to go? He likes his life the way it is. He's got it pretty good. And so he leaves an email open on a shared computer at school, and that sets into motion a weird blackmail-y thing that kind of brings up all the tension in the movie. And so Simon's got to figure out whether he's going to have his hand forced here or come out, basically. So that's basically what you need to know about the plot without too many spoiler alerts. Boy, what'd you think of the movie?
I came in with some reservations, I thought. Just, I listened to the entire audiobook at work, like maybe like a week before I went and saw the movie.
Because it is based on a book.
Yes, it is based on Simon versus the Homo Sapien Agenda. So I went in with some reservations because it's always like when you read a book and then you go see the movie. And then just some reservations about you kind of get tired of. The majority of gay or queer films are either based off of like a coming out story or about some sort of trauma or harassment or a sad ending. So I had some reservations that like it's kind of playing into that aspect of like a narrative trope for gay movies. But then when I went and saw it, it was nice because it was just a sweet coming of age movie that played into like this. Like the historical tropes of just a normal coming of age movie, and it's just like
a sweet 16
and it plays into that, and it can be just this cute love story that ends happy, which for most gay movies doesn't end happy. Or there's so much of an external threat of like the act of coming out where it's like I'm going to be rejected or there's something like that, being like, no, that's not the problem. It's still. It tackles more of the idea of like that internal secret that you're holding on to that is your thing. But the story is almost more about just relationships and the friendships and friendship dynamics and how a secret can affect that or how friendships change and develop rather than it is like inherently about being gay or even being a love story. Like you don't figure out the love interest till the very end. And there's something kind of really beautiful about like being a gay teenager and like kind of wanting that secret admirer. Like that's this kind of beautiful thing. And then
can you explain that a little more?
I think that like the whole idea of like you're gay and you're trying to like figure out who else is and like who you might have a possibility of like being in some sort of relationship with. And like even there's a point where he's like going around trying to find this
Figure out who his pen pal
is. whose internet name is Blue, and so he's like trying to figure that out, and there's and he's kind of asking around, but it's and romanticizing all these people that it might be, of like, oh, it could be this person and I could like foresee a relationship with this person, and then like, no, it can't be them. And you kind of romanticize all these possible relationships, and especially in high school and especially being closeted, I think that was kind of really nicely captured. But I think in total, like, There's some reservations I have with like the movie and those things, but like overall it's just a cute movie, which is kind of what we need, and I think what was refreshing about it.
I'm going to get back to the reservations in just a second. Gary Lezak, your review.
Well, I thought it was excellent. I'm a pretty big critic. I don't go to a movie theater and watch a movie and think, oh, that was a perfect, great movie. This one, I think, had a couple of flaws in it, but overall, at the end, it was incredible. And when the movie was over, everyone was just still sitting there. It's not that everyone cheered, like in some movies at the end of some movies that are emotional at the end, but everyone just sitting there. It's like they took it in, and it was a packed theater, and no one left. I was like the first one to leave, and it was incredible. The most amazing thing that's just hitting me, here's Simon in the movie. He knows of one other person at his high school that might be gay. Well, he knows one that is out and gay, and then he hears about this one that's secret that they do marvelously in the movie, trying to figure out who that might be. And it throws you off here and there, and it's just really, really well done. But it reminds me, when I was in high school, I was at a high school with 3,000 kids. And I knew of one that was rather open and everyone talked about. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's one other person that's gay here. One other person. It's really about 10%. Mm-hmm. So out of 3,000, there were probably 300 others, but I only knew of one. And that was back, you know, in the 1970s.
I mean, is that part of not just within the world of the movie, but within our bigger world, why this is important? Because you can imagine if you don't have a lot of pictures of, you know, gay teen romance around you right in front of your eyes, if you can at least see it in the movie theater alongside all the other, like, whatever, cheesy teenage movies that are forming your idea of what love is.
I remember, like, staying up late as a kid and just, like, finding any possible, like, gay movie, gay TV show, and just, like, absorbing everything and, like watching But I'm a Cheerleader when I was, like, 12, and, like, that shaping me, and, like staying up to watch, like, Queer as Folk and searching out any possible queer content or queer literature or something just to be, like, ooh, I am a part of this. Like this is what I can relate to. These are storylines that I can relate to. And I think the point being is that, like, we just need more of that content and more diverse content like that.
And there's a whole thing nowadays that, you know, within, you know, my own employers at KSHB and people around us thinking, oh, it's easy nowadays. It's like, oh no, you don't have to come out because everyone knows, and it's not as big of a thing anymore. But it's absolutely untrue. That's one of the biggest stories of this movie, Love, Simon. He's got a secret. He finds out he's gay. It is very difficult for him to come out to his friends and his family, and he's forced to do it. So when would it happen? It could have taken another few months. It could have taken another few years for him to decide to do it. Everyone does it at their own time. Mm-hmm. But it is still extremely difficult today because you find out you're gay yourself. It's a private thing, mm-hmm. and it's a secret you hold. And to hold that secret, this thing that's one of the greatest things that can happen to you. It's the greatest thing to be gay. It because we get a different perspective on mm-hmm. life. We get to see it from how straight people might see it, their lives, but they don't quite understand how it is to be gay. We get to see both perspectives. Mm-hmm. And so it actually is a great thing, but extremely difficult, and a secret that is very difficult to decide to share and how to share it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with someone who is in the age group that Simon is, one of our callers, Eli, at 816-235-2888. Eli is a local seventh grader. Hi, Eli.
Hi.
Can you tell us what this movie means to you, Love, Simon?
This movie means to me, it was a very powerful and empowering movie for me to go see with a bunch of my friends, and it really made me feel how the world is it's becoming more and more accepting and free.
You felt optimistic after you watched it?
Yes, very optimistic, especially with the crowd of people in the theater. After it, there was everyone just started cheering, and it made me feel very, very hopeful.
Tell me about your experience in seventh grade here in our area.
My experience is that really everyone really knew that I was gay before I had to tell them, and so it wasn't that big of a deal of me coming out, and all my friends don't really care about it, like, in a good way, like, my friends can't.
You know, I think our connection might be getting kind of rough, but I just want to say, like, it sounds like, you know, even though Eli has had a good experience so far and is part of a different generation that views these things differently, that still meant a lot to him to be surrounded by other people watching this movie.
And things have changed. You know, Eli right now is able to come out and get support of his students, fellow students. Boy, you said the jocks came up and talked to you about it. And, you know, you said you might have been a little oblivious to any negativity, but they were able to do so. So this is 2018. You know, the younger generations are totally much more accepting than the older generations that are still learning.
I also think people are just catching up to how cool we are. Is just the reality is like queer people are inherently fascinating and exciting and bring a very interesting perspective to life and challenge ideas.
But I just want to say there must be some families or some communities where that's not true. And I think that's been one of the questions people have had about this movie is that Simon has a totally supportive family
he's also a very privileged white cis man and not very straight appearing, so there is some and that goes back to my reservations, but I think the point should be though that no gay movie can represent the beauty and diversity of gender, race, sexuality within the queer community. And the point is we just need more stories. And this is a start. This is a push to be like, we can have a sweet, loving, caring movie, even if it's not perfect, even if it has its flaws. But we should support that because if we support this movie and this sort of content, we're going to get more and we're going to get more diverse stories. And I think that's the exciting part.
There's other stories out there, like you said. This one is ultimately a tremendously positive story of support. Some negativity in there, but very, very few rejections, if any. And so that kind of story does exist out there. I was received pretty much with universal positive support when I came out many, many years ago to this point now. But at the same time, there's other stories, like you said, Gina, that are kids that are out there in families that aren't as accepting.
And I think that that's what all on the reverse end is like. That's what makes this movie good is because it shows that there are people that are supporting, that there shows that there are people that are loving and caring. And even if you're coming from a family that it's going to be hard to come out and they're not going to be into it. But this kind of shows that there are people that will love me. There are people and kind of gives you hope.
You can call 816-235-2888 to tell us what Love, Simon means to you or what a movie like it might have meant when you were younger. 816-235-2888. We'll be getting more stories in just a minute. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and I'm talking with Gary Lezak from KSHB. He's a famous local weatherman and the artist Boy Boy. We're discussing the movie Love, Simon. It is the first mainstream motion picture from a major studio that gives gay teen romance the full-on rom-com treatment. So did you like it? 816-235-2888. We're going to go to a couple of our callers now just to get a couple more stories and perspectives. Let's talk to Buck. Hi, Buck.
Hey, good morning.
So first of all, Where are you coming from on this?
Well, I guess my story goes back several decades. I grew up in Warrensburg, not too far from Kansas City. It's kind of a college town, small, you know, relatively small community. And I pretty much knew from the time that I was probably pre-teens about myself. And yet I kind of followed the traditional trajectory that I think most people tried to force themselves into during that time.
What time period are we talking about?
We're talking about, I was in high school in the early 80s, graduated in 83. So it was, you know, go to the prom, go to dances, have girlfriends that you never, I think in Gary's case, you know, he mentioned this too, you never really think of those girlfriends relationships, or as in the Simon movie, you know, the guy's mom kind of teased that girl, whatever. I think it was more than a very internal struggle, and yet I just kind of tried to stick it out. I think if that's the best way of putting it, you just grit your teeth and you say, well, I'm going to just do what I need to do to survive, and I'll deal with my internal feelings later. So I kind of did that for many years. Ended up, again, following the standard trajectory of, you know, go to college, get a job, get married, have children. I have two children who are now grown and flown a coop. I was married to my wife for 21 years. I've been married to my husband now for 4 years. We've known each other for 9. So right about the time that my wife and I were splitting up, I met John, and everything has continued from there. So it's interesting. If you talk to a lot of people in our age group of around, you know, late 40s, early 50s, in their current age, I think there's just so many stories out there that are almost identical.
What would it have meant to you to see something like Love, Simon when you were a teenager? Do you think it would have mattered?
I was thinking about that. I was just thinking that very thing is, you know, you were describing it as the first kind of movie of its kind. And I remember thinking, you're right. There was nothing like that in my high school days where anyone was represented as, you know, being acceptable as a gay person, or being able to come out in high school without just incredible wrath. You know, it's a very different time and a very different place. And I think if Love, Simon had come out years ago, I think it would have had an immense following. And I think it would have probably changed a lot of things throughout the years. I think people would probably look back and say at that, you know, during that time, it was very much like Gary described, it was a secret that you held very close in your heart and you just didn't dare share it with anyone.
Was there a moment in this movie that either touched you or left you with questions or just wrestling with something after seeing it?
I think, well, there were many points that touched me, and I think Gary had the count at 5 or 6. I was just extremely impressed when Simon first came out to his friend Abby. And that was the first time that he really even said the word gay to anyone. And you know, Abby was, of course, like, of course, you know, we're friends. This is the way it is. And I would kind of joke about this now in life. I think in many cases, you come out to yourself long after everybody else probably knows the truth. You know, my husband jokes a lot about how did they not know? You know, I'm a high school kid who worked in a radio station, loved Barry Manilow and Donna Summer. And, you know, the ongoing joke around our house now is how did they not know?
But the
truth is they didn't know, you know, and I did. And yet I just kind of stuffed it, down inside and tried to move on the best way I knew how, the best examples. There were no real role models back in that time of happy, successful, you know, gay people.
And well, that's what's something we don't have to do. We don't have to do that anymore. That's one of the things where we're at this point. 15, 20 years ago, this movie wouldn't have existed. It would have been blasted. It would have gotten more controversy than it's getting now. And it wouldn't have even been mainstream. So it's just that it's 2018. We're allowed to have a movie such as this.
And Gary, that point Buck was just making about, you know, the need for role models of happy gay life,
right.
That it sounds like a lot of why you did decide to come out publicly.
Absolutely. It's very rough. You know, there's a lot of us out there, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be a role model for the younger and for the parents, mm-hmm. parents that have gay children that have, you know, LGBT, you know, all different varieties. It's difficult for parents, and they can be in denial. You think the parents might not know. I mean, the father in the movie was oblivious.
Mm-hmm.
Simon was not obvious, and he did not know that Simon was gay.
We're going to get to that, but I want to talk to a parent who's called us from Overland Park. Stephanie, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great.
So what do you want to share?
Well, and I'm so glad that you're putting this into the parent spotlight now. I'm absolutely not to take anything away from the LGBT community, but I think it's really important for parents to see this movie as well. As a parent of a transgender child, I was so touched by this movie. And I get very emotional because I love my child so much. I don't care if he's trans. I don't care anything about that. The scene that hit me the most was whenever Simon was talking to his mother, and he said, "Did you know?" And she said, "I'm sorry, I get emotional." She said, "It's not that I didn't know. I just knew that you were not happy. Something was different. You know, you used to be a happy child, and then something changed." And that's what happened with my son. He was born a girl but identifies as a boy, and he used to be such a happy kid, and then he was full of this rage and anger, and I had no idea where it was coming from. I thought maybe he had been molested. I had no clue. But when he came out, it was like, no wonder you were so mad. You didn't have, you know, you were alone. You had nothing, nobody. And so now he's at KU. He is with people who are just like him. You know, he knows that he has my love and support. I am not quiet about it. I tell everybody. Because I love my child and nothing else matters. So this movie to me was unbelievable.
Thank you so much for that call, Stephanie.
Powerful, Stephanie.
You bet.
Powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Boy, for you being part, like, very close in age probably, mm-hmm. to Stephanie's son, what does it feel like to you to hear a parent's perspective on that?
I mean, I think that's beautiful, and you're an amazing parent and I think that the part that I teared up was, like, the conversation with the mom, too, was that it's a subtle conversation, but there is this tension when you are in the closet, and there is this, like, and it kind of gets released, and when parents are there and you can slowly open up that conversation and
feel closer to them again.
And feel closer to them, and just in a way that it's a hard thing to describe. And it's a constant conversation where it's like it's not coming out once, but it's this slow kind of you come out, and then you come out to yourself later, where you kind of start realizing who you are and all of those things. It's great when that door is finally opened and you can have those conversations and those connections with your parents.
I want to play a clip, and this clip is a spoiler, like, major. So, I mean, we've been sharing spoilers, but this is like a biggie. Okay, that's out of the way. This is after Simon has come out to his family. He has some follow-up with his dad because his dad's initial reaction was, we'll call it, awkward and fumbling. And his dad has made jokes throughout the movie, and it always shows Simon's face responding to them. He's making jokes, assuming that he's got a straight son and he's been wrong. And this is the dad kind of trying to patch this up.
How long have you known?
I was around 13.
4 years. 4 years of eating dinner together, 4 years of going to movies together. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have missed it.
Hey, no, Ted.
All those stupid jokes.
I know you didn't mean them.
I just want you to know that I love you. I wouldn't change anything about you.
Hey, stop crying.
I'm trying. I'm trying. Oh, God. Come here.
They're having a hug. Gary, you even hearing it again, I can tell that it's having an effect on you.
Boy, I don't even know if I could talk. It's a powerful moment in the movie to watch the father at this time react that way. The same father wouldn't have reacted that way 20 years ago. I'm serious. This is now, and it shows how things have changed. It's actually, I hope fathers out there do react this way, because you may have sons and daughters that are, you know, lesbian, gay, transgendered, bi, and you don't know. And then if you find out, it may be shocking, but know that it's okay. Not just okay, it's great.
Gary Lezak, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And boy, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
In just a minute, a coloring book teaches young artists about the women of Kansas City's history. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. You're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now a local coloring book about the inspiring women of Kansas City's past. I'm here with librarian Joanna Marsh from the Missouri Valley Special Collections. She's just out with a coloring book, Coloring Kansas City, Women Who Made History. Hi, Joanna.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. What made you want to take on local women's history in coloring book form?
Sure. So the idea was kind of sparked by another institution, actually. The New York Academy of Medicine Library did something similar where they would invite other institutions to submit coloring pages based off their collection items. So as a department, we really liked that idea, thought it sounded like fun. But I kept thinking of doing my own illustrations of people instead. So it kind of became its own standalone project. And I kept thinking about these amazing women that I had learned about.
While working in the special collections?
Yeah, but while fielding reference requests mostly from researchers. So a couple of them I had never heard of before until I got those reference requests. And I thought, you know, what a great and fun way to kind of highlight some of these women and get people to pay attention to them, you know, while doing a fun activity.
Tell me about one of those women who early on, as, you know, while you're taking research requests, came into your awareness. You didn't know anything about her before.
So Lyda Conley is one that I remember distinctly from a researcher writing an article about her. And she and her sisters were known as the guardians of the Wyandotte burial ground, which is now called the Huron Cemetery over in Kansas City, Kansas. So she actually got a law degree in 1902 to protect the burial ground when it was threatened to be sold. So she took her case all the way to the Supreme Court and became the first Native American woman to argue a case at the Supreme Court. So she's very fascinating.
And law degree in 1902 as a woman. I mean, was that, did the legal community accept her with ease, or did she have a battle there too before even going to the courtroom?
I imagine it was a battle. I didn't do a lot of research about that aspect of her life. But yeah, it was certainly rare for that to happen. So she's definitely an interesting person. Opal Hill was another that I hadn't heard of before I got a request.
A professional golfer. And I love this illustration. She's in like kind of a jaunty hat and mid-swing.
Yeah, she had a spunky personality, I think, too, from what I've read. But she has another great story of she was a nurse, and then after the birth of her child, contracted a severe kidney infection that the story goes that she was given 3 years to live, But she took up golf at the recommendation of a doctor who said, you know, get outside, get some exercise. So she took up golf at the age of 31, I believe. So pretty late to be starting that and then turning professional years later. So she became a very favorite golfer, either the second or third woman to turn professional in the U.S.
The collection of women in this book, they're diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a really wide range of people. Was that a deliberate effort you made, or was that, again, just as someone who works in a collection of local history books and documents, that you had stumbled across this representation of the women who make up our past?
I'd say it was pretty deliberate. I had a very long list of people that I could have added. Of course, we had a limited number, and there are several constraints. I was working with, you know, finding a good enough source image to draw from was a challenge in some cases. But also wanted to make sure that I did have a balance of women representing different fields. We also needed to make sure we had an adequate number of resources in our collections to ultimately point people back to. So all of these factors kind of played into what you see here. So
tell me about Mary Lou Williams.
So she was, I guess she's one person people might recognize a little more than some of the others. She was widely regarded as one of the greatest female jazz musicians. She was a piano player and composer and moved to Kansas City in the late 20s and really worked during the height of the jazz era with Andy Kirk, went on to work with Duke Ellington and some other famous musicians. So her time in Kansas City was, you know, shorter than some of the other women in the book, but it was definitely had its impact. It's been said that her time here really shaped her as an artist as well.
You know, I once wrote a book where each chapter was about a woman from Kansas history. And mm-hmm. Part of what I remember about that experience is feeling like whatever woman I was researching and writing about felt for that time period kind of like a friend, mm-hmm. like someone I was spending time with and
sure.
learning from or whatever. You know, it was kind of strange to have this historic companion. But mm-hmm. did any of these women come to feel like companions or even mentors to you?
They really did. To be honest, I think all of them are incredible, and I love all their stories. One woman that I really identify with is Tatiana Dogodavska, who founded Kansas City Ballet. I'm a big fan of ballet, so I'm particularly thankful to her and what she did for the ballet community here in Kansas City, and also has a fascinating life story. I mean, if you start digging in to that information, there are details around every corner that are just really interesting.
Can you give a few examples?
Sure. So I'll try to keep it brief. I could talk about her for a long time, but her father was a Russian nobility and ended up in France because of the Russian Revolution. So Tatiana was born and raised in France, studied ballet in Paris with a very famous Russian teacher. She ended up dancing for the Ballet Russe at a young age, touring Europe during the rise of Hitler. So she saw a lot. You know, her life was not without trauma. But she ends up coming to the U.S., dancing in New York for a few companies, including one that would become American Ballet Theater. And the interesting part is she ends up in Kansas City in 1950 when she accepts a summer gig as a soloist at the Starlight Theater. So
a solo ballet dancer, just
yeah.
without a troupe?
I think she was with a troupe. I'm not sure what the show was, but
interesting.
Her rank as a dancer would have been a soloist.
Gotcha.
So it gets really intriguing for me there because she seems to have fallen in love with the city. There's a really beautiful quote by her in an article from The Star that says something like, "I found here a world I thought had been destroyed during World War II." And she goes on to describe the beauty of the city and visiting the Nelson Atkins and wanting to stay here. And as luck would have it, the director at the Conservatory of Music saw her on an interview while she was in Kansas City and offered her a teaching position. So she went on to develop the dance program there and founded Kansas City Ballet in 1957.
Is there a personal lesson that you have learned from one of these women where you've put it in your pocket and you're like, That's going to come in handy someday, you know?
Yeah, this I example. Think so. You know, with Tatiana, I think she had a lot of trials, and I think that's always a good lesson for anyone. It's a more compelling story when you have to come, you know, overcome difficulty. And I think with her, it's really interesting to think of this woman with a very prestigious background as far as ballet goes from France who ends up in the Paris of the Plains. That just makes me love this city even more.
That was something I was also curious about, is whether Kansas City and looks different to you now that you know some of the women who made it what it is, who maybe don't get talked about a lot.
Yeah, it definitely does. I think that's one reason, you know, I thought a coloring book would be good. These are not only examples and, you know, inspiring people that maybe younger people can, you know, open the book and look up to, but it makes it that much more real when it, you know, they lived in the city and walked these streets. I think it just makes it that much more special.
And thinking about how you were going to portray these women visually, they each appear in what looks like kind of an ornate frame around them, and they look like formal portraits, a lot of them, and very sort of dignified. Were they based on photographs or...
Yeah, so the majority of them were based off photographs or portraits. So that's why a lot of them are in portrait mode, because that's, you know, in some cases, the only source image I had. And I wanted to make sure that I worked from a source image and not just completely made up, you know, their appearance. They're definitely not super true to life. I mean, they've been reduced down to line drawings, obviously. But I wanted to at least retain... try to capture the spirit of each person.
But a portrait is also about, like, dignifying someone. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
And yeah.
We're used to seeing the important history makers in this format, you know, the official portrait where they mm-hmm. look important and serious. And I love that you've represented them that way.
Well, thank you.
Can you tell us, so one of the better known people in this coloring book is Lucille Bluford. Mm-hmm. There is, in fact, a library branch named after her. But tell yes. her story for those maybe who don't know it.
Yeah, so she's known for a very long career at the Kansas City Call newspaper, a prominent African-American civil rights crusader. She was a journalist, obviously. She worked at the Lincoln High School yearbook before and joined the Call at a young age and worked all the way up to basically running the Call. So she's very special to our library system, since we do have a branch named after her.
What is it? Did you learn anything about her in the course of putting this together that you didn't already know that intrigued you?
I didn't know that she was named Kansas Cityan of the Year in 2002 by the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. That was a new fact to me.
What do you think about, I mean, about the way that young children might relate to this book, and what is your hope for that?
You know, as I said, I really hope that it inspires them to kind of go for their passions. I mean, that sounds kind of cliche, but, you know, when you're looking at people who lived in the city, it makes it that much more applicable to, you know, okay, what can I do here to make a difference?
That it's not some famous person on yeah. some other continent.
Yeah, it's, you know, these were normal people. You know, they're people like you and I, and they just, you know, pursued what they felt called to do. And that's, you know, harder than it sounds sometimes, but, you know, they actually did something about it.
Well, Joanna Marsh, thank you so much for coming to talk with us about the Missouri Valley Special Collections new publication, Coloring Kansas City, The Women Who Made History. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow is our monthly arts show, looking ahead to the exciting things going on in Kansas City this April. We will be zooming in on soul music in our city with a filmmaker and record collector. They'll both talk about the past, present, and future of soul music and the importance of the dance floor. So join that conversation tomorrow at 10, and you can listen back to any of our conversations at kcur.org/centralstandard. If you missed the artist Boy Boy and weatherman Gary Lezak reviewing Love, Simon earlier this hour, check that out, kcur.org/centralstandard. And you can still share your review of the movie. We're on Twitter. We're at kcurcst. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan. With help from intern Matt Groby, I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next with Steve Kraske. Don't miss it.